Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 118. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and on this Friday, sitting in for my co-host David M. Todd once again is the great Alex Kozora. Alex, 5 weeks from yesterday, the Steelers report to training camp. We've done a good job of filling getting some kind of interesting, or what we hope is interesting, content up on Steelers Depot this first dead week, but we have 5 weeks more to go to do so.
I know. I was sitting on my computer last night, and I was just kind of thinking, what am I going to write about? And then I realized I got to ask myself that same question for the next 5 weeks. So we got to get real creative here, Dave.
Now, obviously, when we get into those final 2 weeks, if you will, then probably be a lot of camp preview stuff. And I mean, there's going to be some of that along the way and all. But I tell you, I really have enjoyed myself this last week because I'm doing this series on Mason Rudolph and going back through and contextualizing every throw that he made last season. And like I've said previously, I've watched all these games before, but people got to understand, you know, we have so much, you know, pre-draft and post-draft, you know, to try to learn as much as we can about these players. You know, you end up having to speed watch these games a lot of times. So you really miss a lot. You're trying to look for different traits, different positions, this, that, and the other. And, of course, you try to watch probably 3 games in total on most of these guys. But even then, you're trying to speed watch because there's the time element versus the number of prospect elements there. So I've already watched these games technically. But when I'm going back through, and I know you've had to do this before, I don't think so much with the college games, but obviously with the pro games and charting them and the Steelers games. And when you go back through these things, boy, it really opens your eyes to a lot of things that you kind of missed with them. And I tell you, I have learned. I think I've done what do I have posted so far? The first 5 games or 6 games of Mason. I'll have another one going up today of his game against Baylor that I've from last year that I've done. But I tell you, I got now, Alex, where I think I can just looking at the formation and defensive lineman, I can almost tell you where the football's going. And one interesting element they had a couple of games back, I think it was a game with Steve Levy. Maybe it was a game against – it was either against Texas Christian or against Texas Tech. They were talking about how that Oklahoma State only has really 15 plays in their playbook and that – and that obviously, you know, those 15 can be morphed into, you know, 80, if you will, because of formations and coverages and all like that. But there's nothing too fancy about it. You know, it's line up, it's get to read. I mean, like I said, it's RPO city. One of the things I think that stuck out, now this is obviously kind of a no knock on Mason ahead of the draft. I don't think I've seen him throw a football in the air past the line of scrimmage that has reached 50 yards yet.
Even with how vertical they went, it was just some of them came up a little bit short, or what happened on those vertical throws?
Yeah, I mean, he's had some where he would have had some home runs if he puts that ball out there. Mm-hmm. A little bit more, you know, and there's a few where I think even some that James Washington has caught. And another thing, you know, before I forget, that Marcel Aitman, who ended up drafted by the Raiders, you know, that kid's not very fast, but watch this. I don't know how much you knew about Aitman going into this draft. But, man, he looks like he's a player. I know he ran, what did he run, like a 4? You remember what he ran, a 4.6?
Not well, a 4.62, I think, something like that.
You know, not speedy at all, but he's another one of these guys that just finds a way, A, to either get up over the top, or with his, he's like, what, 6'4"?
Big guy.
He is a guy that's got great leaping ability in the end zone. I don't know what I mean. It's just one of the things that stuck out to me with him was, boy, that guy's a player, even though he doesn't have a lot of speed. He might be somebody to watch for the Raiders there. But back to Rudolph. Yeah, there were some instances where some guy, Chris Lacy, you know, guys have gotten loose up over the top. And had Mason been able to put that ball out there a little bit more, you know, we're talking about some big time home run touchdowns. Now, I obviously have not gone through every quarterback in this year's draft class to see, you know, distances that they've been able to throw. Is arm strength, is it what it is when it comes to these quarterbacks coming out? In other words, you know, with hip turning and proper mechanics and a little bit of concentration on mechanics and of course weight room, is this an area where quarterbacks can come out of college and actually see, you know, 5, 8, 9 yards in distance?
Well, I mean, it's hard to quantify how much it can get better. Is it 5 yards? Is it 10 yards? Or what? I mean, I think it's true that you can improve arm strength in terms of a little bit of weight room, but I think mostly mechanically, not locking up your front leg. Some guys will swing their back foot really wildly, and that can kind of affect things. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other stuff that, you know, I'm no quarterback guru here, so I can't speak to it as well. But I'm sure there are things that you can try to do to clean up and get that arm strength better. How would you evaluate his arm strength, though, on the whole? Do you think it's good enough for the NFL just based off what you've seen in college, or do you think that it could be a problem area once he gets work?
You know, I think it's adequate. You know, I know there's the whole ball velocity argument, too, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, his ball velocity at the combine versus, you know, everybody else's and versus, you know, Super Bowl winning quarterbacks and this, that, and the other. I've seen him thread the needle on a few of these throws, okay, that you know, look like NFL throws 12 yards down the field, 16 yards down the field. I would like to see him be able to get that ball out there a little bit more because, look, I mean, if the book on you is that you cannot throw the football in the air 50, you know, more than 49 yards, you know, what are, you know, that shortens the field a little bit for defensive backs to have to, mm-hmm. to have to cover, right?
Sure.
I mean, if you know a guy can't throw it that far, then, you know, it's a little bit, you know, what do you think we've seen? I have to go back and look at some recent charting on Ben, but Ben's a good 60, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the air yards. We can pull that up pretty quickly, you know, for another time or whatever. But, yeah, he can hit. You know, he can hit it with almost the best of them. I mean, he can hit 60, no problem.
So, I think, and like I said, I'm not breaking new ground here. This is one of the things that have kind of been out there on Mason Rudolph. But I think if people go through this game that I'm about to post today, the game last year against Baylor, they'll see if you click on every one of these passes, you know, the deeper ones, you'll see where there were some instances where he missed, you know, some home run balls in this game. Now, if you see him throw that out, you know, that 12 yard out from the far hash, that ball seems to float a little bit, you know. But I mean, that, make no mistake, that's a tough throw.
Yeah, it's one of the toughest.
You know, that 12 yard out from far hash. And he I mean, he's made quite a few of them, you know, completed quite a few of them as well. But it's just one of the things that have stuck out. I'm not overly concerned about it, but, you know, I think it's just a confirmation, more of a confirmation of things that we kind of thought that we knew ahead. And I'll be interested when I finally get all of these games done of his to actually see what the furthest ball flight was and deep passing. Now, he couldn't, don't get me wrong, he connected on quite a few of the deep passes. Another thing, a positive of his that I think has stuck out that I figured wouldn't, I'm not sure how it compares with the other draft class quarterbacks, is this kid is not afraid to throw for the sticks on third down and whatever. And that, you know, that's obviously a good sign. I mean, we've seen NFL, we've kidded quarterbacks in the past, like Alex Smith, about not wanting to throw for the chains on third downs and throwing short of the chains. And I think nothing drives a fan crazier than third down and a quarterback, you know, third down and 10, a quarterback throwing for, you know, throwing 4 yard or dump off or those kind of things. One thing about Mason is he was not afraid to throw for the chains or pass the chains. On third down. So, like I said, I'm about halfway through this. I really am enjoying doing this. I know, once again, probably not a lot of comments. These posts aren't generating a lot of comments, but it looks like they're getting a few views and some people are clicking on the YouTube links in each and every post as well.
Do you, and I don't know if you can answer this or how confidently you can answer this, but, you know, you've watched him really intensely in college, and from what we know about what he's done in the spring, do you believe he can make a true push for the number two job and beat out Landry Jones?
I just think that is such a tall task because of several things. I mean, A, you know, he's not an, you know, not that the Steelers use their quarterbacks under center a lot, but he just, it's just something he's not used to. That's something Landry Jones had to get used to coming out, because he was a spread, you know, quarterback, and you know, all these kids coming out are now. So and boy, I mean, it just RPO city. I mean, it look. It looks nice, and you go through your head and say, boy, I wonder what the Steelers could do if they ran that much up-tempo you know, during a game and all like that. Then you think to yourself, well, it didn't go so well for Chip Kelly. You know, with you know, they put up some points, you know, at times in Philadelphia under Chip Kelly, but you wear your defense out on top of it. Or you can wear your defense out, and you'll wear your damn offensive. You'll wear everybody out, I think, if you go that that quick. So, is he the type of quarterback that can function under, you know, not fast conditions, outside of RPOs, if you will? I think this. I am still bullish on him. I don't know where you're going with this. I'm still very bullish on him, as bullish as I was on him prior to the draft. But I mean, quite honestly, you know, I don't know where to take it from there. I don't know how this thing is going to translate from college to NFL. The smaller windows, the game getting faster, you know, everybody on the field being faster and bigger, and that kind of thing. I just really think it's going to be a tall task. And you know, look, he revealed his goals during an interview on Sirius a few days ago, and he wouldn't openly disclose all of those goals, but you know, he admitted he's going to make a hard push for the number two slot, as you would expect him to do, and he knows his fastest way to getting on the field is actually being dressed on game days. But Landry Jones has a lot of what Mason Rudolph doesn't have at this point, and that's game experience. And, you know, the Steelers back when 2004 with Ben Roethlisberger, I know people get tired of hearing it, and it's good that it didn't work out this way, but they had every intention in the world of him being the number three quarterback that year, and he would have been if not for the injuries to Tommy Maddox and Charlie Batch during the preseason there, you know? So I can't fathom where their initial plans after drafting Rudolph were that they get him up to speed fast enough to be number two. They have to think that he'll be the number three this year, barring anything happening like in 2004, and go from there. And before even, you know, I tried to research back, Alex, prior to 2004 and Roethlisberger being a rookie quarterback to open the season as a number two, I cannot tell you when the previous instance was before that, when a Steelers rookie quarterback opened up the season number two. Now, in 1970, Terry Bradshaw opened up his rookie season actually as the starter against the Oilers in that game. So I think you have to go pre-Bradshaw to find an instance. Not that that means a hill of beans in, you know, you obviously in today's NFL, you play, you know, the depth chart is who deserves to be on the depth chart in history. You know, doesn't mean a damn thing, but you know, short answer to your question is, I'll be surprised if he gets past Landry by week one. Now, middle of the season, that's a different story, but by week one, I just find it difficult.
Yeah, well, I was gonna ask, you know, does it matter about the history of the Steelers and rookie quarterbacks? I don't think it matters at all, because I don't care what happened in the 80s. You know, it's not gonna have an effect on how the game has evolved and how you approach guys today. I disagree with the idea, because I was asked about this yesterday in my mailbag, that, you know, Rudolph could take over the number two role mid-year. I think it's either gonna happen at the end of the preseason or it's just not gonna happen at all, because, you know, once the season starts, and if Rudolph's the three, he's getting very few reps. You know, Jones is the guy. He's been decided on as the guy. So it's going to be tough for Rudolph to get those reps to prove himself. And it's not like Jones is going to do anything that's going to cause him to lose, you know, the job. I mean, he's going to be fine as the backup in practice. So I don't know what would compel the team to want to make that change. I think there's a legit, you know, possibility, and I talked about this right after he was drafted, that Rudolph can become the number two. So I think it either happens, though, after the preseason, or it just won't happen at all.
Well, you know, the thing that maybe they, and I don't know how they would work things, but, you know, maybe it's a situation where it's a close enough battle, you know, that couple weeks into the season, they start maybe splitting up the second team reps a little bit, you know? Mm,
that's dicey, though, because you got to have,
sure,
your backup ready. It's only, I mean, that guy, a backup's not getting a ton of reps, and he's got to get as many as he can.
Sure, sure. I would agree with that. But this isn't Landry's first rodeo either, you know? So, look, I mean, the only true way I think it happens is if it happens out of camp, okay? Mm-hmm. And Mason would have to have one hell of a preseason and a hell of a camp. And as you probably know anyway, or best know anyway from being there, I mean, the you know, how many reps does a number three actually get during camp practices?
Well, it's been skewed in the past, because like last year Landry was hurt, so he missed almost all of camp, and that skewed things. But, you know, there's enough reps there, though, for sure, especially when you have someone like Landry Jones, who you know who you have, and Ben's going to get multiple days off, and they know they want to get longer looks at Rudolph and Dobbs, and they've invested so heavily in Rudolph. It's not like he's a undrafted guy. You know, he's not Bart Houston, where you're just like, you know, he's not making the team. It's not a huge deal. So there's going to be ample opportunity for Mason Rudolph. I don't have any doubts about that.
During the preseason, I know we kind of talked about this before, but between these, I mean, how much do you want to, do you let Landry, look, you don't need Ben to play, and Ben might not even hardly play but a series or two this year. You know, I've always been a fan of, you know, man, I like to see him play a couple of series in a couple of games, but, you know, we've seen Mike Tomlin in recent years not give a damn how many snaps Ben Roethlisberger gets, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, that third preseason game, maybe give him a couple and don't even play him the entire half and then go from there. But other than Ben Roethlisberger time, are you going to want to see Landry Jones for full halves, or are you going to want to actually see Rudolph get some first half preseason snaps? And I guess now the other question is, now being as assuming the plan is to keep Roethlisberger, Jones, and Rudolph, do you even give a guy like Dobbs very much time at all this preseason, with the hopes that maybe you can make him the 11th, you know, technically the 11th practice squad player this year?
I mean, I would hope you give Dobbs reps. I mean, it's going to be a little – you're going to have to walk a tightrope to figure all this out. You know, obviously Ben's not going to get a ton of work. Most of it's going to come in that third game. I think Jones should get pretty minimal work. He's still got to get some, because if he's a number two, you don't want him going in completely cold without any sort of, you know, game reps. But, you know, pretty minimal. And then I think the rest of it goes to Rudolph and Dobbs, because you got to evaluate Dobbs as well. I mean, it's fair to him, and you got to kind of see where he's progressed from year one to year two. You would expect a sizable jump, and hopefully you get it, so you got to explore that. So I'm looking at the stats last year, and granted, again, Landry Jones, I think he had, the collarbone. He missed a good chunk of time, but, you know, Bart Houston in camp last year threw 119 passes. Dobbs threw 192 passes last year. So, you know, Rudolph should be able to easily at least clear 100 attempts, probably more than that. And that's going to give you a good sample size, plus obviously, you know, preseason game action to evaluate where he's at.
Well, I mean, we've seen the last of Jones getting 200 snaps during a preseason, right?
Yes, those days are over.
So, I mean, let's see, if we're looking at four games, let's say 70 offensive snaps a game.
Well, I prefer to maybe look at it in quarters, because offensive snaps are going to be – well, you're talking about just with the whole game?
Total snaps. Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, you can probably do 70.
Maybe 300 total offensive snaps in a preseason, right?
Okay, yep, sure.
All right, so how many do you want to see – broken down, assuming the numbers, 300 in total with the four quarterbacks? Tell me how many you would like to see each game.
Too much math here on a Friday morning, Dave. Ben, you know, basically Ben's going to be that third game. So you're looking at a half. So that's going to be, you know, we'll call it 50 snaps, because you're probably going to get 35 in that third game, half the first half of that game, plus, you know, 15 in the first game, and the second game he'll get a series. So let's just call that 50 for Ben. I would love to see Rudolph probably get half the snaps of the preseason, because I mean, that's your biggest evaluation. That's your, you know, heir to the franchise, basically. So 100, I would like to see Rudolph get 150. So that's 150 and 50, it's 200. You know, Dobbs can get, like, you know, maybe you split Landry and Dobbs 50-50. Maybe you do 75 for Dobbs, 25 for Jones. Again, I think you got to get Jones some amount of work, so I don't want to go too low on him. So yeah, that's a good point, the way you look at it and kind of step back. It's going to be tough, like I said, to try to get all these guys reps.
And the thing is, you're not guaranteed to get 300 snaps either. You know,
sure.
You know, the opposition, you know, depending on how your defense plays, they could put together some long drives and eat up into your snaps. And then, of course, depending on how the fourth quarter goes. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it's juggled. Look, they know who Landry Jones is. And, yes, I would like, you know, I maybe use the third preseason game to play Roethlisberger a full quarter, Jones the rest, you know, the second quarter and the third quarter, and then Mason the fourth quarter, and then everything else. I mean, I could care less if Roethlisberger or Jones get snaps outside of that. This would be, you know what? This would be a great year to play in the Hall of Fame game.
I know, right? Can the Steelers make a late push?
You know, because you could just, the heck with it. You could let Rudolph play the first half and Dobbs play the second half, right? You know?
Yeah, yeah. How let me answer the question fully then. I would say 150 for Rudolph, 50 for Ben. I'll say like 70 for Dobbs and 30 for Landry out of the 300 preseason snaps.
So you're with me then. You don't need to say, I mean, when you start whittling them down, it's hard to find good snaps for guys like Jones, right?
Yeah, but no, I was with you from the start. I think Jones can play pretty minimally in the preseason. I think the toughest thing is the Dobbs situation, because I want to get him reps. I think he deserves the reps, and you want to be able to do an honest evaluation on him. But you're right. You come down to it. I mean, 70 snaps, and I'm being pretty generous with that, you know, giving Jones only 30 here. 70 is going to be, you know, a little tougher to do an evaluation of. So how would you divvy it up, though? Does that sound – would you agree with
Look, I'd like to see Rudolph hit that 150 number.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd like to see Dobbs hit that 75 number. Is that what you said?
I had him at 70, but yeah, same difference.
But the thing is, you know, like we're saying here, I mean, 300 snaps in total for a four game preseason. That's probably high, you know? That's aiming high, maybe. I'll have to go back and look and
see. Yeah, see what they did last year.
See what they did last year and all like that. So,
because you do want to get Jones some reps. I mean, you can't totally cut him off, you know, because if he is a number two, he's got to get some sort of game action. But it's tough because you don't want to play him too much either because you want to look at the other guys.
Right, and that's why I say maybe that third preseason game because, I mean, look, I think the likelihood of Tomlin ever playing Roethlisberger a full half in any of these games is gone.
You know, even the third game, you don't think he's going to play a half.
He didn't even do that last year. Last 2 years, he hasn't even done that, has he?
Really? Maybe you're right. I honestly don't remember.
While we talk here, I'll look that up. But it seems like he has gotten out of games.
It does sort of sound right, though.
You know, out of preseason game. Last year was what? The Colts? Was that the preseason third game?
Yeah, I'm pulling up a replay. I'll pull up the play-by-play here in a second. If I can mute this without it going off. Let's see in the second quarter. Yeah, Landry Jones was in the second quarter.
Jones played 52 snaps in that game. Roethlisberger played 16.
Yeah, he only played the first quarter.
Right, and that was, I mean, he didn't see any. That would have been his highest snap game, right, Roethlisberger?
I imagine.
In 2016. They played the Saints in the third preseason game.
Yep, I'm pulling that up now.
And that was 19 snaps for Roethlisberger in that game. That was the preseason that Landry got like 250 snaps or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, again, Ben only played the first quarter in that one, so you're right. Good pull.
So, in other words, I mean, Ben's probably likely to play at tops 30 snaps this preseason, maybe?
Yeah, you're probably right. So let's bump from 50 to 30. So that gives you 20 left, so you can do like 70 for Dobbs and like 50 for Landry, I guess, kind of be my adjustment to it.
And now I'll ask you, does Landry need more than – is 50 enough for Landry?
Yeah, I think if 30 is enough for Ben, 50 is enough for Landry.
Let me tell you, this should be the most excited Steelers fans have been about a preseason in a while because of the fact that there shouldn't be what I like to call a bobo quarterback playing in things up. You know, even though Dobbs is, you know, technically, in other words, no Bart Houston's, no who?
Brendan Kay.
Yeah, Brendan Kay.
Dustin Vaughn. Remember Dustin Vaughn?
Who is the kid, the tall one that bounced around with the Seahawks? Johnson?
Gerard Johnson.
Yeah, Gerard Johnson. Lord, we could probably go on and on. I call those bobo quarterbacks.
What is a bobo? I mean, I know what a bobo quarterback, but where do you get that reference?
It's
a Davism.
Yeah, like a Davism there. But
and in theory, because you do have a non-bobo quarterback on the roster, you could hopefully get more snaps because you don't have a Bart Houston that kind of just sucks your offense down when he comes in. You get like three and outs every time. So maybe you can stretch that 300 snaps into like 330 if you just get better quarterback play.
Right, that's true as well too. I mean, like, let's face it too. I mean, look, you're going to have a slew of guys in there, wide receivers that don't know what the hell doing at the end. But it seems like we say this every year, though. Too boy, the Steelers depth chart, top to bottom, 90-man roster at wide receiver looks absolutely fantastic. And then, you know, then you only have one guy that makes the plays. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of thing. Now. Now, once again, though, the offensive line should be decent. The third team offensive line. But I'm sure every fan, you know, looks at it that way heading into this. But I mean, regardless, I think there's a good reason to be excited about this year's preseason games, only from the aspect that you should have quarterbacks in there that know what they're doing on every down.
Right, yeah, you're always going to have receivers and linemen and everybody else that are just kind of just trying to figure it out on the fly. But as long as you have a quarterback that can at least kind of stabilize the situation, you're going to have a better opportunity. And like I said, in theory, you can probably try to squeeze out a couple more reps. Not guaranteed, but I like the odds.
Alex, I'm going to point to the fence right here.
Oh, calling your shot.
I'm going to call my shot. The Steelers are going to go undefeated during the preseason.
Ooh, hot takes.
Yes.
Hey, Brian,
yes.
Bringing them.
Yes, they are going to go. They're going to win the preseason championship.
You went half Rain Man on me there for a second, Dave.
All right, we managed to fill up 30 minutes talking about quarterbacks. How were we able to do that? Okay, you know, speaking of quarterbacks, I think this is a good topic. Matt Sims, the new in fact, it kind of flew under the radar, didn't it? His hiring. I think you did post about it. How long ago did that actually?
Like a month ago.
That it did actually happen about a month ago. Well, look, you know, there's been a lot of talk that, oh, what do the Steelers do? They got all these young quarterbacks and no quarterback coach, and Randy Feitner, first year's offense coordinator. Does this mean Landry Jones is technically the quarterback coach in the room? Blah blah blah. I think it's Matt Sims. I just don't think he officially has the title, but this is a guy that spent a lot of time in the college ranks, most recently at South Carolina, is that right?
Yep.
And before that, Florida, was it?
He was a Duke grad. I think he was at Florida.
No, I think he did actually. He followed. Who was the offensive coordinator at South Carolina?
Kurt Roper.
He followed Roper. I bet if you research it, Alex, I bet you find out that Sims was with Roper at Florida for 1 year. Maybe.
All right, I'm trying to pull up the South Carolina bio.
But he went. I think he went from Duke to Florida to South Carolina. So Sims has been around, and I think Roper was the one that said, "Look, he did some good work." Who was the quarterback over there at South Carolina?
Jake something or other. I'm pulling up the article I'd written back then. Jake someone.
I'm going full Rain Man on you right now because I'm trying to do all this off memory. And for 50, when you get 50, of course, I'll be dead then. You can recall. Boy, I'm amazed at how Rain Man-like Dave was at the age of 50.
Jake Bentley.
Bentley. I mean, you know, we don't know how much lip service it was, you know, hyperbole or whatnot. But I mean, it sounds like Sims knows what's going on with these quarterbacks here. So, and I think the thing that stuck out the most, we heard Randy Feitner mention Sims during his mandatory minicamp interview with the media. And then Rudolph mentioned Sims just the other day during his interview on Sirius, and I was surprised to hear that. And it sounds like really officially, unofficially, Sims is your next quarterback coach.
Yeah, in some sort of capacity, or at least in the sense of like the way Sean Sarrett is listed as an assistant, but he was really just Munchak's right hand man and worked with the offensive line. You're right, Dave. Again, the savant that you are, he was in Florida with Roper in 2014, and then he followed with South Carolina. So he just followed this Roper guy around until this year. He's young. I don't know exactly how old Matt Sims is, but he graduated in 2013, so he's like 27 or 28. I mean, it's a pretty young guy with. Sounding like a fairly key role.
Yeah, it really does. And it sounds like, you know, obviously he's going to be in charge of doing things. He's the cut-up boy, I'm sure. The one that's got to get all the cut-ups of, defenses in this, you know, the things that come with being kind of a quality control guy, if you will. But I would not be surprised if maybe this time next year we're talking about, you know, Sims – being the team's quarterbacks coach.
It's possible. I guess we'll kind of see how Feitner handles it and how Sims does. Yeah, they've added, you know, a good amount of youth to the coaching staff. Blaine Stewart, remember, was hired first, and he's not even 30. I'm pretty positive of that. Denzel Martin's now officially just a coaching assistant. He was a scouting intern previously. Martin's pretty young. They hired Dennis McInnis to be the scouting intern this year, and he's got a quarterback background as well up at Oregon. He worked closely with a quarterback. So you're kind of seeing the direction the Steelers are going with these younger guys, maybe a little more relatable, and guys with kind of an eye for quarterback play.
All right, now let's get off quarterbacks for a little bit here. I guess we should recap a little bit of news here. It sounds like Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Jameis Winston is going to be suspended for the first three games of the 2018 season. It doesn't sound like he's going to appeal that, but I don't know. I don't know for sure, obviously. Assuming that three-game suspension holds, then that means he's going to miss, or he would miss, the Week 3 Monday night home game against the Steelers. And I can already hear fans going, oh, no, this is setting up to be one of those games.
So it looks like the Harvard boy, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is going to likely get the start. There is a report today from the Tampa Bay Times that Ryan Griffin could pass Fitzpatrick. I don't know if that's off-season fodder or not, but one of the two, unlikely to see Winston.
The same Ryan Griffin that I wrote about several times?
Oh, yeah, the Saints from the Saints, right, that you were enamored with.
Right. He is a guy that I thought deserved to stick around and could probably be a pretty decent backup in the league. I don't, just really hasn't gotten the opportunity. Spent time with the Saints. I think he's bounced around maybe one or two other places. He was a guy that I think Randy Feetner was, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of enamored with. He's a kid out of Tulane, right?
I believe you're right. Yeah. Yes, Tulane.
Okay. So, we'll see how that battle goes and all. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, 0-5 lifetime against the Steelers, and should probably be 1-4 because that deep pass in overtime to Stevie Johnson against the Steelers, what was it, 2000, I don't know, was it 10 or 13, I forget, member of the Buffalo Bills, and Stevie dropped it right in the end zone in overtime. I'm sure you probably, I don't know, do you remember that game?
I do. I saw the clip you posted too, which helped out.
Yeah, so look, the Steelers couldn't beat Mike Glennon, a few years ago, and they seem to struggle at times on the road, especially on the road when they're seven-point favorites or bigger. But look, a lot can obviously happen between now and the time that game rolls around. But it's worth noting right now that it looks like Jameis Winston won't play in that game. And you want to talk about Buccaneers? This is a team that can now. I think they play, who do they play? The Saints, the Steelers, and
I believe the Eagles.
And the Eagles to open up, not necessarily in that order, but those are their first three games. You want to talk about staring 0-3 possibly in the face right there. And that, as we've seen in the past, 0-3 is really, that's a death sentence right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them.
All right, any other news that we should talk about?
Not a lot, Dave. I wrote an article yesterday just about Bud Dupree and if he's going to be the right outside linebacker, which sounds like he is. Is he going to drop into coverage at the rate that the right outside position usually does, which is about 10% higher than the left? Or is Butler going to adjust things and, let him rush a little bit more often? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I don't know exactly how it's going to go. I just want to keep a close eye on it because I'm really curious to see if Butler kind of changes things or if he keeps them the same. And if he keeps it the same, then that's going to hurt Dupree, I think, because he's going to be dropping more, rushing less, and he's not the guy you really want going backwards most often.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, this outside linebacker thing as a whole, this group as a whole, I'm resigned to the fact now that they're going to switch sides and probably play predominantly on those opposite sides now. I wouldn't have believed that, a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's going to be interesting to watch for sure, the drop percentages and things like that. So, I don't know how much we're going to learn during the preseason, right?
I'll be curious on the numbers just to get an idea of how much those guys drop. I mean, it's not a guarantee that it'll translate, but it's something I'll be keeping a close eye on, like I said.
Why don't we talk about offensive players? We're going to go position group by position group, obviously, as we do every year before training camp gets underway here. But today I want to focus on offensive young offensive players that most buzzworthy as we sit 5 weeks out from the start of training camp. And I don't think we can start this list without having maybe Marcus Tucker leading it.
Yeah, I think Tucker's going to be the number one guy in terms of bubble guys, not like, you know, guys like James Washington, but talking more of the camp sleepers. Yeah, you know, Tucker, I think Steelers.com just has an article up on him, so I'm curious to check that out. But yeah, a guy that has a legit opportunity to make the roster, has been with the team now going into, I think, his third year, and a guy that can kind of do it all. They're teaching him how to play the slot. He can play on the outside. He can return kicks. He can be a gunner. He's shown a couple flashes in the preseason. You know, if the team signs Eli Rogers, it's going to make Tucker's path that much harder. But even if they do, he still has an opportunity, and I think he's going to have a good camp.
I would probably second most intriguing offensive player. I would probably go Jalen Samuels from the aspect of, boy, I can't wait to hear and see in preseason him with the pass protection aspect.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see how they use him. I'm just curious what the split's going to be at running back, receiver. I feel like it's going to be, you know, I know that obviously he's listed as a running back. He's in the running back room with James Saxon, but I feel like they're going to use him as a receiver quite a bit, even in the preseason. I think they really want to explore that because they know once the regular season starts, that's going to be the main way that he gets on the field, and they want to probably maximize those reps in camp, in the preseason, so he's as comfortable as possible and they have as good evaluation as possible on what he can do. And he mismatches out in the slot and out in space. So, you know, I'm interested in the pass protection, but I also recognize that he's probably not going to do a whole lot of that in the regular season, and his main contribution is going to be in the receiving game.
And I think we've seen some commenters, and I don't know if they listen to the podcast or not, commenters on SteelersDepot.com, continuing with the narrative on him, and this was probably because he was written up by like NFL.com or whoever, you know, some of these, I think there's a lot of laziness that goes on with some of these people, you know, believing everything they read when it comes to some of these projects. Look, he is not a tight end or a fullback, okay? I realize he lined up some in traditional tight end, what would look like tight end and fullback alignments on a football field, and thus that's why he was listed as a running back, wide receiver, tight end slash fullback going into the draft. But make no mistake about it, this guy is not a tight end or fullback. He lined up in those positions merely because that's the best way to get him out in space, to get him the football. He is not going to block for you as a tight end. He is not going to lead block for you as a fullback whatsoever. Am I right?
Hashtag you are right.
Just get that out of your mind right now. You're not going to see him. If he lines up in those positions during camp or during preseason or whatnot, he's going out into a pattern to catch a pass. It's not a traditional position for him, nor should it be. As Alex kind of alluded to, it's going to be interesting to see how he's used outside of that. Is he a guy that maybe you H-back him, you know, and do various things with him out of a position such as that? Line him out wide in the slot. Line him out even wide, you know, wider, if you will. Get him running those option routes out of the, you know, this is a guy that you definitely want to see can run the seam out of the back. I mean, run the wheel route out of the backfield. Those kind of things.
Yeah. Anyone else, Dave, that you're looking at offensively? Any sort of sleeper or guy of intrigue?
I think just because of what you've written about him, Patrick Morris.
Yep. That was going to be one of my guys. I think he's the most interesting of the, you know, new faces on the offensive line. I think it's a guy that has a tough path to the 53 because, you know, with Filer getting more interior snaps and them kind of viewing him as an interior guy, I mean, with Finney there as well, I don't know how you make the 53 without an injury, but I think this guy has the talent to make a 53 and get there in maybe 2019.
He's the Doug Legursky, no? Bigger, Doug Legursky, right?
Well, I think he's maybe a little bit bigger, but they're kind of the same build. But I think Morris is a better athlete. I think that's kind of Legursky was kind of just a phone boothy, blocker, run blocking type. I think Morris is a good athlete, and I think he's just kind of a freak guy in general. I mean, he tested tremendously well and translated on the tape with him getting out in space and then pass protection and working at the second level. So, I mean, this guy had almost as of a good, I think it was like almost as good a three cone time or short shuttle time as James Washington. I mean, he tested insanely well. And so, I think he's going to impress.
He's one of those ones that I haven't gotten a chance to drill down a lot on. Did he play any guard at Texas Christian?
Yeah, he played both guard and center. I think he started his career as more of a guard, and then he kind of flipped and injuries happened. So he's got time at both guard and center, yes.
So maybe he's really a reverse Finney?
Yeah, I think Finney's a better comp than Legursky.
So I guess what I'm getting at this is the prospects. Is Morris a better center or guard right now at his entering the NFL? Or is the answer yes?
Yeah, I don't have a great feel for that. I think he can be successful at both. Maybe center because he is a little bit more on the undersized side, a little bit lighter, and you like that at center more than guard, but I'm not going to say what he is or isn't a guard or center without seeing him on a Steelers uniform yet.
Do you think maybe he could potentially be a better backup center than Finney?
I mean, down the road, I'm not going to say that for year one, though.
Right. Not for year one. Because let's face it, I still cringe a little bit when I see Finney get some center snaps.
You do?
Yeah.
I cringe when Hubbard had to do it. I was happy to see Finney in there with
Hubbard. But I've just always, man, I've always thought, since becoming a pro that guard is the better position for Finney.
But you expect Finney to be the backup center. Founcy went down, you'd expect.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that Morris is going to overtake that.
Maybe Filer. Yeah, because they are getting Filer center snaps.
Yeah. Anybody else on offensive? Look, Damon Patterson. He obviously doesn't have a chance to crack the. I don't know, maybe a tiny chance to crack the 53 if he can do something on specialty. To me, he would have to supplant DHB, I think. He'd have to be a tremendous special teams talent in order to crack the 53. But maybe is Patterson a guy next on the list, or would it be Prince?
I think those are both good candidates. Patterson's interesting because he does have that coverage experience. He did a lot of coverage stuff. We talked about it before. When he came to Utah State, he was a coverage guy, basically only. Youngstown State, even as a starter, he was still running down kicks and punts last year as a senior. So that's rare and definitely interesting. And the Steelers, I think, have had a focus on receivers that can be good coverage guys. They brought in Tevin Jones, Trey Griffey, both guys that ran down kicks and punts at college in addition to playing receiver. So I like Patterson. Prince is another good name to throw out there. Was a tryout guy that made it. I'll give you two more. Farrah McEver, the tight end from FIU, just an interesting story. Was I think a quarterback in high school, came to NC State as a receiver. They turned him into a defensive lineman. He has a pick six. He blocked the punt. They pushed him back to tight end. Didn't really play much there at NC State, though, so he transferred to FIU, started last year and had a good season, especially with the Jake McGee injury now. That's going to at least open up more reps. I'm not expecting McEver to make the team, but practice squad is a possibility. And then the obvious name on the list, just for the intrigue and the story, though I'm not expecting him to do much, but Christian Scotland-Williamson, the rugby tight end. I mean, he's listed 6'9", 274. I mean, that's by nature, it's going to be an interesting guy just to see kind of where he's at and learning the game and kind of how his progression goes.
Yeah, and to be clear on him, this is a guy that, per the international rules, I don't think he can make the 53, can he?
I believe he cannot. He's going to be the de facto 11th guy on the practice squad.
Right. It's all practice squad with him. But, I mean, look, you never know, right? I mean, it's a heck of a – it's a monumental transition for him to make.
Odds are it's going to be more story than substance, but hey, I still want to see what this guy can do because it is a cool story.
Right. With McKeever, is there anything there at all?
I think it's just interesting with the background. I think, one, the special teams value, because he is this kind of long dude that's made some impact plays there before, a potential seam threat, and a guy that, while not a great blocker, has to do it a good bit at Florida International. He did pass protection. He did run blocking. He lined up in a three-point stance. So it's not that he's one of those move tight ends that just can't get in a three-point stance and can't block to save his life. He is a lankier guy. He's got to add some muscle. He's going to have some leverage issues, but he's a tall guy that's a long strider that can make some combative catches. So there is something there. Again, I do not expect him to make the 53. I think you're pretty much locked in unless, obviously, there's an injury that happens. But I think McKeever can make a practice squad spot.
Quadre Henderson, people are going to get mad for us not mentioning him, I think. But I've watched – look – I think he's just this year's Marquise Mays. Is that the kid from several years ago out of Alabama?
The receiver. God, he was a Steeler. I don't even remember him being a Steeler.
Remember, wasn't he an undrafted free agent?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right.
And, boy, there's a lot of fuss about him, I think, coming out. And, boy, nothing there. I mean, look, Quadri's going to have to we've said it before, it's going to have to be Stephon Logan or bust. I mean, he's going to have to make himself uncuttable on kickoffs or whatever. Now, it will be interesting to see with the rules, with the new kickoff rules and maybe the space that creates, if a guy like Quadri Henderson can take advantage of it. But, God, I just, in today's NFL and 53-man rosters, to have a return specialist, that's such a luxury, I think.
You're right. That's going to be the challenge. I think it's a great point that you make, though, Dave, when I wrote about it the other day for Steelers Depot, is that, it sounds like kicks are basically a punt this year because there isn't the violent collisions. Everyone's kind of, running downfield together, I think is the way that Dave Taub with the Chiefs explained it. So it is more like a punt than it is a kick, and that's going to help guys like Henderson, who – profile more of a punt returner than a kick returner, especially in the Steelers system, because the kick returners usually are bigger guys, tougher guys, and kind of deal with those big collisions rather than punt returners, which look more like Antonio Brown and Eli Rogers. So I think it's only going to help Henderson's odds, but you're right, he's got to have a stellar preseason, and it's just tough to get the opportunity as well with kicks going into the end zone, and you might get four kick returns in the whole preseason and like maybe five punts. I mean, that's just, and who knows how many you can return to those punts either. Like, it's just a small sample size to try to impress.
Right, and he's not going to be useful to you anywhere else on the roster outside of that. I mean, he's not a wide receiver. He does a lot of wide receiver screens, a lot of end arounds. I mean, very rarely do you see him catching the ball way down the field at Pitt? I think so.
I mean, in theory, he could be some sort of gadget guy, because if he makes a team, that means he's going to be active as your special teamer, and he could give you a gadgety thing if Fietner wants to use him. So, I mean, you're right. The issue is that he's kind of lacking a defined position, and he's not going to be refined as a receiver or a runner, but I guess you could argue that he can be used for three or four plays a game, or game plan specific to a week of just trying to get him in space.
All right, of all those players we just talked about offensively that are kind of buzzworthy, if you will, ahead of training camp, which one, maybe outside of Tucker, has the best shot at maybe making the 53?
The 53.
Right, I know it's a long odds on all of them, but which of the longest odds guys has the best shot? Does that make sense?
I mean, you mentioned Jalen Samuels, but are we counting him?
No, not him. Him and Tucker him and Marcus Tucker don't count.
I don't know. I mean, they're all kind of, I think, longer shots. I think they're all going to need an injury. Maybe Henderson, just because he could kind of make it on his own without needing an injury. But
really?
Who would you go with? Because I can't think of another name that could just make it on their own without bumping, without an injury that kind of creates the spot.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know, maybe
Morris is the ninth, but that's three interior guys you're keeping compared to one backup tackle.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, it really is tough for these guys.
Yeah, but I think there's good practice squad potential. I think there's talent there. So, don't get me wrong. I mean, these guys can play.
Well, you wrote not long ago that you thought this was the best undrafted class that the Steelers have had in quite a while.
Well, mainly the last two have totally sucked. So it was a low bar for them to try. Basically, if anybody gets on the practice squad, it's a better class than last year or the year before.
All right. End up on this Friday. Boy, how in the heck did we manage to fill an hour? I'm good, aren't I? no, I just ramble. Jerry Dulac wrote that the Steelers can find 10 running back, or that he can find 10 running backs that will give the Steelers an equal chance of winning as it would if they had Bell.
Yeah, I mean, even if that's true, what the names he listed, I mean, what he listed, Gurley, Zeke, David Johnson, I mean, okay, yeah, those guys can be really talented, but define finding them. Yeah, they're out there, but you're not getting them. Finding, knowing that they exist and having them on your team are two totally different things.
Right, you're not just going to all of a sudden have Saquon Barkley come over or Todd Gurley, right. I mean, you know, can you do it with guys, with fringe guys, you know? Mm-hmm. Can you do it with Adai, Blunt, and who was the other one over there?
Corey Clement.
Right. Can you do it with that group?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different question. So even if we accept the premise of that you can find guys that can replace Bell, and it's hard to find someone that does exactly what Bell does, but sure, you could find a super talented, you know, David Johnson or Zeke Elliott. I don't see the Steelers having a top five pick anytime soon to take a Zeke or a Barkley. So I just reject the premise of that than just even the question of if you can find those guys.
I understand what he was trying to go for. He just attacked it wrong, right?
Yeah. I mean, and yes, you could stumble on a Kareem Hunt or, you know, a Kamara. I mean, it's not, I mean, there's talent out there running back, but again, what are your odds of doing that? And how much confidence do you have in being able to find that guy immediately? No less too. Not, you know, within 5 years, you probably find someone at some point, but do you find that guy in your Super Bowl window or is it too late?
I'm going to give you another hot take here. Kareem Hunt's going to have a very disappointing season.
You've been down on Kareem Hunt, I think. Weren't you calling his kind of fall?
Yeah.
What's the reason for that?
I think he was just beneficial of a few nice big runs there, a few big plays earlier in the season, and it kind of carried him from there. Now, obviously, yes, you have to get those big plays, but I don't think he's going to be as productive top to bottom in his sophomore season than he was his rookie season.
All right. That's interesting. I mean, that's fair. I don't know if Mahomes being the starter is going to help or hurt.
Yeah. How's that going to go?
That's a good question. I couldn't tell you.
I mean, this is a guy, I mean, you drafted him to be the guy, right?
Yeah. I like Mahomes. I think he's going to have a good year. I mean, he's got a huge arm. Is that going to make teams, you know, do less eight man fronts and worry about, you know, covering over the top? I mean, I think that Hunt can get more as a receiver because I think Mahomes is going to do some crazy scramble drills and, you know, it's going to get guys open that'll create some space that way. So I think Hunt can have a good season as a receiver. As a runner, how much is that going to affect him? I'm not really sure.
All right. Bucky Brooks ranked Steelers receiving corps third in the NFL behind two NFC teams.
Let's see. Who are those NFC teams?
I think the Vikings and Atlanta.
Let's see. Yep, Vikings in Atlanta. I mean, that's
arguable, I guess.
I would probably argue Pittsburgh is better, maybe better than Atlanta, but I guess it depends on how much you like Calvin Ridley. With the Vikings, that's fair. You can take the Vikings over Pittsburgh.
I mean, Thielen's something, and Diggs, when Diggs is healthy, you know, stays healthy and is involved, it's going to be interesting to see how that new situation works out for them over there now with the quarterback, you know, situation at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Julio upset now over there in Atlanta. Gonna be interesting to see how that shakes out there. So, look, you know, Juju and AB put together a heck of a damn season last year. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
definitely.
Is the receiving corps better this year with let's assume Washington out of the chute as a third versus? Is it a step backwards without Martavis right out of the shoot, or is it a push, or what?
It's hard to say. I think you could argue it's a step backwards at Martavis at his best, but are we using the idea of him at his best? You know, we're looking at Bryant last year where he was obviously rusty off suspension and really didn't get it going until the last month of the season. I think you just call it a push and hope it gets better.
I tell you, there's one thing, one byproduct come out of studying this Mason Rudolph game by game too, is that James Washington was not just, he was not just a deep ball guy. You know, he ran a lot of those 12-yard slants, and was good at it. You know, getting open in space and getting the football. He ran a lot of those 12-yard outs. You know what? He's and I would like to see. It's unfortunate we don't have a lot of all 22 on. How much all 22 do we have on Oklahoma State from last year? Three games?
Yeah, I think three was coming to mind.
And I can't remember. He runs a great comeback. He really does.
He's definitely a more complete receiver than Bryant was or probably ever will be.
Right. And, I think that and you go back to – I hate to keep using Marcus Wheaton as a comparison because I was kind of high on Marcus Wheaton coming out of Oregon State. And, you know, we didn't have the all-22 that we have – you know, now back then and blah, yada, yada, yada. But, he really looks like a better than average route runner and a better route runner than I thought initially was. He'll make those combative catches as well, too. He breaks tackles. His yak was one thing that Marcus Wheaton, I don't think had coming out of college was his yak yards after catch. And boy, Washington could certainly run away from people during his career at Oklahoma State. So, man, it's not hard to be excited about James Washington potentially being this year's number three.
You're right, but right now it's all potential and it's got to translate. And you know, you just can't expect everyone to be Juju. So I think Washington will have success. I'm hopeful for it, but you know, no one knows. We'll see what happens.
All right. Anything else before we head off into the weekend?
I think that's everything. What are your weekend plans, Dave? What are you doing?
Probably watching a lot of Mason Rudolph tape.
You watching the World Cup at all? Any soccer?
I've had it on. I can't pat my head and rub my belly at the same time sometimes. So when I'm trying to write and some of this, I can't have music on or I can't have TV volume on. I'll have it all in the picture, but I won't, you know, I can't.
Really, not even music. You can't even do music.
I can't multitask that way. No. I can't chew my tummy and rub my gum at the same time. I gotta be locked. Heck, you've seen how long it takes me to write posts. Posts sometimes.
That's true.
It's painful. True. It's gotta be painful to watch. I wish there's a way I could block you and Matthew out of the editor when I write. That way you can't.
Oh, I'm pleading the fifth on that one.
Yeah, when I look at it, because I'm sure you probably have screenshots or something of how ugly that stuff of mine looks.
I'm not getting myself in trouble here, Dave. I'm not incriminating myself.
All right, what do you got planned this weekend?
I
might go see a movie. I don't know. I think my wife wants to. Me and my wife are probably gonna go to. We haven't been to the Clark County Museum, History Museum, since we've moved here, and I'm old now. I like museums and old stuff and stuff like that. So
is that guy from Pawn Stars work there?
Yes, he does. That's where we're probably gonna go.
Cool. Well, yeah, go. He won't give you a price, but he can tell you all the information. Do you watch Pawn Stars?
I used to before it kind of jumped the shark.
Yeah, you know, so. That's a good way to phrase it. Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm more American Pickers guy.
And look, I like American Pickers too when I get a chance to watch that. But yeah, I love, like I said, sir, I like this old Vietnam stuff. I love 60s stuff and Vietnam War and kind of political history and kind of going back through the Kennedy stuff and all like that. That's kind of where I've gravitated to when I don't have football on now. So
cool. Well, enjoy.
All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on the Twitter machine at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on the Twitter machine at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kozora on the Twitter machine at Alex_Kozora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to support the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar, and We'll find something more to flap our gums about an hour come Tuesday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.